Welcome to Knowledge Cast. This is a look into the world of knowledge management, information management, data management, and everything in between. This is brought to you by Enterprise Knowledge. I'm Zach Wall, founder and CEO of EK. And today we're continuing a series that we started last year, and we're going to hit on one of the top trends in knowledge management, that being AI, or I should say the intersection of knowledge management and AI. For those of you that might be following the news or maybe looking at your LinkedIn feed, you see AI, ChatGPT, AI, this is hot. This is what everybody seems to be talking about today. But it doesn't seem like there's a lot of understanding of what that actually means or what it means to the field of KM. So I've asked two of my colleagues, Joe Hilger and Luli Tesfaye, to join, both experts in this topic. And Joe, if you don't know, is the COO and co-founder of EK and sometimes host of the technical episodes of Knowledge Cast. And Lulit is partner here and vice president of knowledge and data services. Welcome both.
Thank you, Zach.
Thank you.
All right. That sounds very formal, y'all. Let's pretend like we like each other. So here's where I want to start. Artificial intelligence means a million different things to different people. Self-driving cars, robots that are going to take over the world. What does it mean in our world? What does AI mean in the context of knowledge management?
From our perspective, AI, or the way we reference it, enterprise AI, AI for the enterprise, is about leveraging machine capabilities to solve traditional as well as new emerging knowledge management and information management problems, in the sense of delivering organizational knowledge, data, content, information in a way that is intuitive and closely aligned with how people search or look or want to interact with their data. We do this in the wild. We want to bring this to the enterprise, meaning that the age-old problems of findability, discoverability, use and reuse of information, using machine capabilities to augment or automate or efficiently solve those problems.
Got it. Joe?
Yeah, Zach. And I completely agree with what Lulit's saying. And I want to say that we've been doing AI for 5 or 6 years now, long before ChatGPT became a thing. We have a client for which we built a solution that if you invited your colleagues to a meeting, it would read who they were and send you recommended reading in advance. There was no ChatGPT to do that. We were doing it using knowledge graphs and search and other tools. I think ChatGPT and its capabilities are what's made this hot. But at the end of the day, it's about solving the problem of getting people information at the point of need without them having to ask for it, and doing that in a way that is both performant, smart, and works at an enterprise level, not departmental. So yeah, it's ChatGPT today, but really, you'll notice Lulit gave a definition, not a technology solution. I think that's important.
And you all will notice as listeners that Joe said we were doing this before it's cool. So that's the hipster version of knowledge management, I guess. So let's pull this apart a little bit. Lulit, you used the phrase using machine capabilities, which sounds very jargony. What does that actually mean? Like, how do we do this? What is the right way? And how does this work for the enterprise, as you say?
So there are a couple of ways to think about this, but in terms of, I'm going to focus on like the use cases for knowledge and data management. When I say machine capabilities, thinking in terms of machine learning, for instance, to aggregate information, make meaning out of it when it's too large for a human to go through. So data science, machine learning capabilities is one. Joe pointed out that yes, ChatGPT, but the technology behind that has existed for a long time. Large language models. I remember, I think the first, when we started experimenting with BART and GPT 2.5, that was a few years back. And the machine capability behind that is the ability to aggregate information, connect it in a way that humans may have overlooked, leveraging, you know, learning models as well as machine augmentation. Neural network is another one for those who are more interested in the AI space. But at the end of the day, it is bringing siloed data and content together connecting it with the contextual information that users have, a business has for their organization. So for instance, revenue for a coffee company is defined as a very different concept than revenue for a large financial institution. So allowing machines to understand what this means within your context is another one. And this is where graphs, ontologies, connecting metadata for machines in a machine-readable way comes into play. And then I think the third piece is helping machines understand shared meaning. That means understanding when you have a specific metadata or type of content, you would want to be able to connect it with something else. Right now, AI cannot do that on its own. So the leveraging machine capability to pull these things together, but also keeping humans in the loop to validate, to understand, to help the machine understand the context. And then the third piece I would love to get into maybe later in the conversation is the governance aspect of it, because all of this is new right now and it's the Wild West.
You just used the phrase humans in the loop. And Joe, I always like it when you talk about the difference between explainable AI and black box AI. Can you break that down for our listeners a little bit?
You know, this is important as you're diving into things. Explainable AI is AI that it doesn't have to be the end user, but someone in IT or your organization can break down how it came up with that answer correctly. And the powerful thing about that is that it is understandable why you're getting answers and is tunable and changeable to make it better. Black box AI is AI typically driven by machine learning, though both can use machine learning, that is taking a whole bunch of information and giving you back a result. The problem with black box AI is it works great. It seems to have no work or effort. You just drop it in and you're off and running until it doesn't. And what we've learned over time is people quickly lose faith in AI initiatives. If something breaks and they can't be told why, then they stop trusting the system. And it's funny, what we're seeing with ChatGPT, there is an element of black box AI there. And what we're seeing as solutions is they're taking more explainable AI tools and using that to resolve the problems of black box AI. So for instance, they're using knowledge graphs or vector databases or vector search engines to feed information to ChatGPT. So it's picking from the best, most likely usable information. Hence, they've taken something that can be a bit of a black box and they've given the ability to control it better so that they can get better results from it. So this is, as you look at your AI initiatives, ask yourself, is this completely a black box solution? If so, that's a little scary. Or is it something that I'm going to be able to tune and make better as I see problems that are specific to my world? Lulit, any thoughts or anything to add on that? I know you've been dealing with this a lot.
Yeah, I think one thing that I would pull on a little bit there is when it comes to contextualizing your AI, I think it's important to note that these language models, especially the generative AI side of the world, it really is an expert in the English language, not in your business or in your organization. It's really regurgitating in a way like the next best word and pulling information together based on that. Until, to your point, Joe, you give it that context either through vector databases or knowledge graphs to understand. And I think the word of the day is going to be context, because it's really important. Relationships and context of your data is what we mean when we're talking about the enterprise version of AI, doing your LLM, accelerating your journey there, or solving your next cognitive search problem or semantic search or Q&A problem and how you interact with your solutions. It's important to have that contextual, the ability to help AI infer as well as understand your business and your organization.
Excellent. And just going back to the key here, the concept of explainable AI is that the receiver of the knowledge or information or data or all of the above will actually be able to understand why they're getting what they got. And that's really important. I'm sure everybody's heard this term hallucinations in context of AI. And that's a fancy word for saying that it's getting stuff wrong. So it's one thing if you're asking it kind of cute trivia questions online. It's another thing if you're making organizational decisions about it, or if it has to do with how your employees will stay safe or serve their customers well. And so as soon as you bring AI to your enterprise, the comfort of it getting something wrong is much, much lower. The concept of being able to break it apart and explain it is what potentially helps the quality and really the comfort of having it as a knowledge offering within your organization. Joe?
Yeah, you know, Zach, you really brought up an important point. There's a lot of different ideas for AI, and we're seeing customers saying, I need an AI solution. And that means they want to do something with ChatGPT. They want to use a large language model, and they don't have a plan for what to do with it. But what you said is so important as you're making these decisions and making these plans. A lot of these tools are still dealing with hallucinations and getting things wrong. So you're going to want to pick your starter options, something for which it's not cataclysmic if you get it wrong. In other words, choose that solution that allows you to have some breathing room if 10% of these are incorrect, right? So maybe you're working with your help desk or your contact center and it's starting to answer people's questions. If they get some wrong, that's not ideal, but it's okay overall, as opposed to something that would cause you to lose a customer immediately. Lily, you've dealt with this.
Yeah, I was smiling here because I think the biggest thing here is when you think we're focusing on large language models and ChatGPT and hallucinations here, but the other aspect of this is when you're talking about accelerating your AI journey, it's just not like these solutions, right? The biggest thing when you talk about AI, enterprise AI maturity, and this is why we have this as part of our initial process in when we're working with our clients and accounts where, you know, what are the other components of AI? And the biggest part, Joe, you called it, is culture. And culture folds within it responsibility, ethicality, that's a word of AI, and also the threshold for getting it wrong. A financial institution with that threshold is very small versus, you know, global development company that's more on the cutting edge and putting together, or a startup that's innovating. So it is really important to understand what your risk threshold is if AI is to get it wrong. And part of this is that bigger picture of the what's our culture, what's our business, what does our data look like, and what are the skill sets that we would need to deploy the right type of AI solution?
So both of you you're kind of talking about use cases, right? You're saying like, it's one thing to say we need AI. So I'm the CEO of UK. It's my job to say we need AI, but I don't really know what that means or what it will do for the organization instead until we start talking about use cases. So what are those use cases that we're seeing in the context of AI for KM, enterprise AI? What's really exciting and actually being done now? What problems are being solved?
So I've got my favorite, and Lulita, I'm sure you've got about seven afterward, but my favorite is as always, it's going back to search. And this probably is not a surprise for those that know me. But what we're seeing now is, and you can see it on Google, as you do a Google search these days, it says, do you want an AI-generated answer? And if you look at it, what they're doing is they're calling information from multiple sources and giving back an answer or a result that's really an answer to the question. Why this is exciting to me is we've constantly talked about search being more than a list of documents, and breaking down silos across the enterprise. And Lalit said this. So those silos can be organizational, they can be technical, system to system, or even inside of that within a document. And what we're seeing ChatGPT do, and LLMs, I should say, as a whole, I should stop saying ChatGPT, is we can now take search, and the first result in search can be really an aggregation of bits of information from multiple locations that answers the question. And this is really what we've always been looking for, that first result to be the answer to the question and then the later results to be things that can be supporting materials, et cetera. So from a search perspective, I'm really excited about what we're seeing here and how we're finally breaking down silos in search and getting the answer, not a list of results. Lalit, I bet, like I said, I bet you have 6 or 7 others that are equally compelling.
Yeah. So, Joe, you remember this. I think 2 or 3 years ago, if you asked me this question of like AI use cases, I would say we had about maybe 10%, maybe 15% of our clients doing some sort of piloting or prototyping around AI. I think for the reasons and advancements that we've been talking about, we've seen that number significantly rise in the past, just over the past 2 to 3 years. So today, if I do a quick scan of the different clients that we have about like 50 to 60% doing some form of piloting, prototyping with AI, not necessarily LLMs, right? Different types of AI, recommendation engine being one of them. And what's top of mind, and I recently had a webinar about how to prepare for Microsoft Copilot that's coming up. And the biggest thing that we're seeing, especially for those organizations, be it on Microsoft or not, is the ability to understand and do something with dark data before AI finds it. And when we say dark data, that means the data that is lurking in your systems that doesn't have the right security, the right privacy, the right controls in place, where it is becoming important to classify and label your data in such a way that for GDPR and our clients in the EU, this is about usage rights, this is about lineage, this is about the quality of the data and explainability. For all parts of the world and many organizations, especially here in the US, it's about classified information, especially for our clients within the federal space. It is being able to classify data in a more automated fashion before you can use it for advancement. So you start seeing the symbiotic relationship between AI and KM in this scenario, where KM, traditional content management, governance practices are coming into play to in support or in rescue of AI plunders, whereas on the other side, you can leverage AI itself and the capability to automate this process.
Joe, I love the idea that you're using AI to provide governance before you start using AI for other purposes. That's creative.
Exactly.
And that makes fantastic sense. And it's just kind of funny.
KnowledgeCast is brought to you by Enterprise Knowledge, the world's largest dedicated knowledge management consultancy. From training to benchmarks, strategy, design, prototyping, and all the way to enterprise-level implementations, Enterprise Knowledge wants to be your services partner. Spanning the fields of knowledge management, knowledge graphs, data, learning, advanced content management, and enterprise artificial intelligence, contact us at info@enterprise-knowledge.com to discuss how we can support you.
Lalit, I also want to point out the fact that you touched on something I was hoping we were going to get to. AI can enable knowledge management. It can pull together different sources of information. It can spot trends. It can provide customization, and it can pull things together from different sources and create new content, knowledge, and data for different types of users. But KM is also a really important feeder of AI. I think that we've heard from a lot of our customers who jumped to the exciting bit and bought a tool and tried to implement an AI solution and failed, realized that they hadn't considered the basics. Do we have the right content? Do we have the right structure? Do we have the right taxonomy and metadata and then ontology? Do we have the appropriate governance processes around those things? Do we have the right people to manage this? Do you, the two of you, want to maybe share some of the foundational elements of KM? What's most important to get right before you get to do the fun bit?
From my standpoint, this is such an opportunity for our KM leaders out there. You're always looking for funding to get things done and accomplished, and now you've got it. The executives want to use AI, and if you have old, outdated information, if you have information that's duplicative, or more importantly, even in conflict with one another, AI will fail because it's going to be listening to the wrong information. So we have a period in time, and it's funny that chief data officers that we see at conferences are getting it. They're going, we got to clean our data up or AI is going to break. Our chief knowledge officers need to be saying the same things. We've got to clean our data up or AI is going to break. You cannot successfully implement an AI solution if you haven't gotten your house in order before you start, because AI is indiscriminate, it moves fast, and it looks at a lot of stuff. That means you better be clean and ready to go, or you're going to embarrass yourself. Or worse, you're going to be the reason that that AI initiative fails. So for our chief knowledge officers that are listening to us, now's the time. Go ask for money, get some cleanup work done, get things ready and organized so that as we move forward, you're going to have a successful AI solution. Lilit, you're laughing, so I'm sure there's even more to what I'm saying.
No, I think it's very similar to that, but I'm smiling because I think what's interesting with what's happening right now, LLMs and like ChatGPT, then this AI version caught on because the business gets it. It's not coming from the data team. It's not coming from IT. It's the normal us that get this process, right? Like it's English, we search, we find, it's intuitive. And that's why with all the hype and the craze. So where I'm going with this is that I know I've been joking about this. We are the cool kids again, right? Like we used to be the nerds that are, you know, the knowledge engineers and knowledge modelers and, you know, data engineers in this space. But I think it's a great time to be in our field right now, because at this point is where we start shining in a sense of, and we're seeing this from the clients that are coming to us. How do I get my data ready for AI? How do I connect it? How do I give it meaning? So for large organizations, especially that have data in many, many places where that have gone through in the past 2 years, the past 10 years, moving it into a data lake or a data warehouse, they have it in one place, but they still cannot understand how it's related, what the meaning is. And I think this is where KM, specifically a semantic layer within the KM organization, is where KM comes into play and creates that layer of meaning and context and understanding for AI.
So let's be a little bit more direct about this. Historically, the CKO has gone begging for $100K to fund a tacit knowledge capture or content cleanup project or to prototype a knowledge base. Meanwhile, the CDO of today is saying, hey, I need $5 million to make AI real. And the rest of the company is saying, sure thing, here it is. You sure you don't want 8? This is real. It's physical. It's what makes an organization's knowledge and content and data visible and actionable. And so one of the reasons I think we all get so excited about it is because it's the fruition of all the things that we've been saying through our entire career. But it's so much more impactful, and it creates this level of reality for all the great work that's been happening in the KM field. If you've been spending all this time doing tacit knowledge capture, capturing the expertise and the lessons learned of your experts, if you've been cleaning up all of your content, if you've been tagging it and structuring it, if you have been creating these models so that people can find and discover the right stuff, all of that work is now going to be surfaced through enterprise AI. And it just creates such a strong justification for KM as a field. It's really, really exciting to see. So we've been throwing around a few terms, and I actually want to make sure that we pause and define each of these for our listeners. First is large language model, LLM.
So the very simple way, without getting geeking out on this, of just defining a large language model is it is neural networks or machine learning that is trained on petabytes of English language data, so it can predict or understand the next term. So you look at an English sentence and you understand how it's structured. And based on that, you can anticipate what the meaning of it would be. So that is the simple way of putting it. What it lacks is it has some context in terms of like its neighbors in words. It doesn't have context in terms of an understanding of the ecosystem it's being used in. It is something that is very expensive to train. unless you are a large financial firm or a Google. That's not something that's recommended in a sense. I think it took about $4.6 million to train ChatGPT, the LLM for right now. So something that is could be an undertaking. And the other challenge is you need a lot of data to train it, to make something meaningful out of it. So that we're seeing now, there are a lot of open source solutions in them on the market that organizations can take behind their firewall, a library to start with, and then start contextualizing it with their own information. That's the better path to take.
So there's a key to that, right, Lulit? I mean, all is not lost if you don't have $5 million to create your own LLM. There are open standards and openly available LLMs that any organization can use and leverage, yes?
Yes. And I think the key there is for many organizations right now, especially for enterprise, the decision point is what's the safest way to use LLMs? And this is where these open source large language models that you can take behind your firewall and start training and contextualizing with your data to, you know, to power multiple applications for different use cases.
Nice. And just one point of clarification, you had said English language, but in fact, these exist in what I would assume would be many, many languages. Yes.
Absolutely. I say English because that's the largest language model right now that's trained based on the English language. But in the future, we're seeing a lot coming out with different languages, that same logic.
That's going to be interesting to watch as well, to see how they begin to intersect and work together. Okay, so we covered LLM. How about ontology?
So the definition of ontology, it's the simplest way to think about this is it's a schema or a logic that you use to describe and it's important, the end is important here, connect relationships between your data, connect your data. So what that means is information architecture or taxonomies and metadata allow us to describe our stuff and organize it in hierarchical relationships, parent, child, you know, company and employees, structuring in hierarchical definition, whereas ontology allows you to add a third layer of connection to show how this project is related to this project based on either a shared person that worked on both projects or the topic of the project. So it gives you that kind of 3D connection, which is very instrumental for machine learning and AI, because that's the only way you can tell AI how something is related to another that we humans know, but had no way of encoding that for a machine before.
So this is similar to the concept of triple stores that have been around in search for a while. Lulit works at Enterprise Knowledge. Enterprise Knowledge is expert in enterprise AI. And so we may infer that Lulit has expertise in enterprise AI. How about knowledge graph?
So that is a third layer of ontologies, meaning once you have your ontology, that logical model of how things are related, think of it like a whiteboardable conceptual model. When you take that and apply that to your data and add data to your logic, that's when it becomes your knowledge graph. So Zach, you said triple stores. An ontology would say company has employee. That's the relationship. Now AI knows how company and employees are related. But then when you go that, take that and apply it to your data and say enterprise knowledge has employee, Lulit, then that's where you get your triples, the subject, predicate, object, and then you would have their own specific URIs and connections there.
Did you say thripple? Is that an EK term? Or is that...
Triples.
No, I like it. I think we should go with that. I don't know what a thripple is, but we definitely need to bring that in. Joe, you've been pretty quiet. Either you don't know definitions or you have something to add here.
I am familiar with these definitions, but thinking about, I think it is important to define this stuff, because what we see is that we hear taxonomists say they're ontologists, right? Taxonomies are classifications. They're ways to organize and classify, group things together that are similar, whereas an ontology is truly mapping things directly or an implicit relationship. And think about what we're talking about for LLMs. They're good at predicting the next word. They're not good at understanding context. So a knowledge graph designed by an ontology is going to have context and be able to feed to the LLM the context that makes it smarter. And this is where starting to understand these building blocks that Lalit was taking you through, why it starts to make sense as to why these pieces fit together and why we're seeing people that got excited about LLMs and excited about taxonomies all of a sudden, oh, wow, this all fits together. They're related things that make one another stronger.
You're being a little subtle about this, but I will be more direct. Over the last year, we've seen a lot of people that we knew to be taxonomists by trade all of a sudden start describing themselves as ontologists. And taxonomist does not an ontologist make. In fact, I think they're pretty different skill sets. One is really about vocabulary, controlled terms, and the hierarchy of those terms. And one is really modeling the business and both the skills to be able to do that and the skills to be able to evoke the requirements. Yeah, there's some overlap, but these are different things. And that's important for our listeners to understand as well. You can be both, absolutely. But just because you know how to do taxonomy design does not mean you know how to build ontologies. So we used a phrase a little ways back, information at the point of need. And I want to go back to this because it's so telling to me. I always learned this phrase in terms of the learning world, right? Learning at the point of need. How do I do this thing? And I just want the answer of how do I do it? We're now talking about information at the point of need or knowledge at the point of need. And this connects to this word that we keep using of context. So help me understand this. How does enterprise AI deliver knowledge at the point of need? And how do inference and context help for that to happen?
I have a very telling case study for this that serves as a good example. So one of our clients that's a training provider in the healthcare space, their biggest use case or need is to be able to arm their nurses or doctors or their healthcare professionals based on a few contextual information, the exact type of training and certification and regulatory compliance checklist that they need in order to maintain their education as well as their certifications within their industry and trade. And the solution here, the solutions that we're talking about, what we help them, this is actually a great example of like how NotKM, a semantic layer, as well as AI, a recommendation engine, come together, where using KM to describe and organize the content, learning content that they have over 3 or 4 systems. Some are acquired, some are internal. They have over 50,000 courseware materials that can only be attributed through the process through a machine. So what KM did in this scenario is help them, one, their learning professionals that used to manually recommend content based on, you know, the user's profile. We took that and leveraging ontologies and the graph solutions that we're talking about as a semantic layer, help the machine learning algorithms understand how a human learning expert recommends content to an individual. And the contextual information here is their clinical setting, the type of professional that they are, nurse, doctor, physician assistant, you name it, the type of diagnosis that they're dealing with, the topic of the medication or what they're looking for. And then the list goes on, right? Like the states that they're in, because jurisdictions have different regulations. All this contextual information was able to be fed to the machine learning algorithm and AI so that it can make an explainable recommendation at the time of that need, where a nurse who supports seniors within a nursing home, not a hospital, right? There's a contextual difference here, is coming in and looking for her next continuing education certification. She could immediately pick up where she left off or pick up the right course to get certified. So I thought that would be a good example of what you're looking for, Zach.
Yeah, and there's such a big point to this. We are no longer just trying to describe the information or the data. It is equally, if not more important, to describe the consumer of that stuff. And so in order to deliver knowledge at the point of need in context, we also understand the recipient. Where are they? What's their skill level? What's their educational background? What's their native language? All of a sudden, we are, again, fulfilling the promise of KM here. We're not just giving somebody a bunch of stuff. We're not just even giving somebody the stuff they asked for. We're giving the stuff that they asked for in the context of their need and their level of understanding and their goals and missions and everything else. And that gets pretty wild.
Yeah. And let's take this to another level. I've heard at different times people who are deep within the KM community say to me, you're doing information management. You're getting us information. It's still not yet knowledge. And my reaction was always, yes, but without that information, you can't generate knowledge. But what we're seeing now with AI is, and I understand what they're saying, too much information doesn't make you smarter. It just overwhelms you, even getting it at the point of need. But AI is allowing us to give you the right information aggregated from multiple locations in a targeted way that is contextually relevant to you so that you can go, oh, wow, this is now something I know, hence knowledge, that I can reuse for myself. So from my perspective, and I like that we've been challenged on this. Hey, this is information management, not knowledge management. Well, guess what? Now it's knowledge management. Now we're getting knowledge to people that allow them to see it and doing it in a way that automates problems that we didn't know we could solve before. And for me, that brings it all together.
You know, I've never had patience for the, this is knowledge management, this is information management, this is data management, this is content management argument, but it has never been less important than it is now because we just see these things coming together from every single angle. Regardless of which one you start with, if you're doing it right, you are connecting all of those dots.
Yes.
All right. So I'm bought in. I'm sold. How do I get started? Where should an organization begin? We talked about the use cases. I know that's an incredibly important first step, but Lulit, Joe, take us a little bit further there.
I think the areas where we have found successful to get started are those use cases that are very visible and come from parts of the organization that has an understanding and buy-in. So I'll give you an example. I think the marketing department has been at the forefront of cutting edge solutions because they have a very visible use case and a way to track metrics for revenue generation, for customer retention, or for customer acquisition. So those use cases that are low hanging, and it's very important to start very small in a sense of, you know, a matter of like weeks or months prototypes. The projects that we've seen succeed are those that start with a 2 to 3 month prototype and then are coming from the business while supported by very tangible return on investment attached to the matrix and success factors. That's one aspect of this. The second thing is those organizations that have institutionalized these prototypes or use cases and have taken it to enterprise-wide, multiple from just one business unit to multiple departments, systems, are the ones that are paying attention to two things. One is, well, I'll say one thing, which is integration. And when I say integration, I'm not talking about just systems integration, but also cultural integration, blurring the lines between the different parts of the organization because the value of the solution is much more important than the silos that existed. So investing in integrations, both in culture, but also systems integrations, because we were talking about that layer where we're no longer moving data from tier to here anymore. Data can sit where it's at. I don't think anyone is looking to go through any more expensive migrations. I think it's important about bringing that layer together, both physically and metaphorically, logically and metaphorically in a sense.
Lulit, I think you're hitting on a really important point here. This is not the sort of thing where it's going to take years for an organization to show value around AI. In fact, if an organization is thinking that way, they're really, really going down the wrong path. We love Agile, and an enterprise AI project, like most KM initiatives, works really well in an Agile environment. Pick a couple sources, pick a data source, pick a couple content sources, pick a use case, start trying to solve a problem, And what's great about the technology that we're talking about is it's very much extensible. You could expand your ontology. You can add on additional sources. You can add on additional use cases over time. Just like the brain learns over time, you can look at your enterprise AI initiative as something that will constantly be learning and evolving and adding on new, quote unquote, subjects or topics or capabilities. So we are getting to the end of our time, and the last thing I want to do is ask you both for a little bit of a prediction. Obviously, the market is changing really, really quickly. At this intersection of knowledge management and AI, where are we going to be in a year? What's going to be happening that we are beginning to see or not yet seeing, but are about to? Joe, you want to go first?
You know, I've been thinking about it and weird things have come to mind. For instance, componentized content management. One of the reasons for it is we've talked about, well, we need chunks of content that we can expose in search. Guess what? Now we don't, because we're starting to solve that problem. We still need componentized content management for content reuse, but, and I know this is a specific thing, but to me, we all have a year or so ahead of us where we're going to learn what changed, what paradigm changed when we had a way to automate breaking down silos and delivering information at the right level, at the right context, at the point of need. That whole mindset is one I think we're going to all see ourselves grow into, and will be a year from now, people are going to have very smart answers as to what to do and how to do it. And to me, that's exciting. I can't wait to see KM turned on its head and us doing more important things, and KM as a whole becoming more valuable to an enterprise than it is currently perceived to be today.
More valuable and more visible. I think that visibility piece is really, really key to it. Lulit, how about you?
So I'm not a fan of predictions, but if I must, I would say tangentially related to Joe's, I would see it from the perspective of new and emerging roles and skill sets for an organization would have. And I think we've been hearing a lot about prompt engineering being the next, you know, new role, but I do see that not staying, right? Just like when we did Google, we had to learn how to search or query the system, writing full sentences. Now, fast forward a few decades later, I think 25 exactly years later, we can, you know, search the way we want. We even find things that we didn't know existed, right? So in the same thinking, I think the AI that we know in prompt engineering and getting it right is going to go away. Primarily because you need to be good for prompt engineering because you're searching the whole universe. But as we get better, and this is important because we've been talking about being the cool kids, knowledge engineers and knowledge managers and the data modeling experts are going to come to the forefront of AI so that you can search intuitively and look for stuff the way, this, going back to our definition of enterprise AI, the way you would want to be able to look and find information intuitively and at the time of need. So my prediction is in a way that the roles and skill sets an organization needs in-house is going to shift a little bit to focus more on the knowledge, the content, and the data meaning of it, as opposed to the AI itself.
So a career's worth of being the guy who says, you know, what do you do? And I answer, oh, I do knowledge management. And everybody gets quiet. Now I get to say, I make AI work, right? That is the new definition of a knowledge management professional who is essential within their organization.
That's
there
cool.
You go. You can have that one for free. So with that, Joe, Lulit, thanks for joining this very special episode of KnowledgeCast. And to our listeners, to check out more, visit our website at enterprise-knowledge.com. We have over 500 different knowledge assets freely available, no paywall, no login. Come and just check out our stuff. Thanks, y'all.